Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciates you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with fellow Army Ranger Mitch Monin. Mitch owns a number of Ashley furniture stores that really treats vets well. And then we'll talk with one of my West Point classmates about his book on General MacArthur. Then we'll review last weekend's Service Academy football games. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to introduce Mitch Monin. We met when he hosted a big event for veterans at our local professional baseball field. Since then, we've gotten to know each other a bit more, and I bought some furniture from him. So thanks for joining us, Mitch. Glad to have you with us.
Thanks, Denny. I do need, you are not the first, particularly in the Army, that took my last name Monin and turned it into Monin. I heard that all the way through basic, airborne, and Ranger. So it's but I've been called worse. So not a problem. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Okay, Mitch, tell us about your time in the Army. You were a Ranger. When and why did you join the Army? Why Rangers?
Joined in 1990. I was 26 years old. I had made some really poor decisions in my life. I had gotten caught up in drugs and alcohol that had brought me to my knees, and made the decision that I needed help, got cleaned up, and decided I needed to test the bounds of who I was. At that point in my life, I didn't own a key. Everything I had in the world, I could throw in a bag and carry over my shoulder. So I needed to find out what I was made of. And I decided to test that just as hard as I could. So I volunteered for the Army, volunteered for infantry, airborne, and then for Rangers. I had a brother-in-law at that point who was a third bat Ranger down in Fort Columbus, at the Fort Benning School for Wayward Boys. And he thought that that would be a pretty good idea. So I took about 6 months, trained hard, ended up at the MEP station in May of 1990, and then made my way to 1st Ranger Battalion. And a little bit later that summer, early fall, down in Savannah, Georgia, at Hunter Army Airfield.
Wow. Well, let's just say I'm sure you had a challenging time in Mother Army. What you just described was not an easy role, but I'll bet you loved it.
It was phenomenal. First thing, there was a cohort of individuals in my basic platoon that all had Ranger contracts. So we kind of banded together as a group of brothers. Actually made it to 1st Battalion with three of those men that are good friends of mine today. Just had an incredible experience. Great training all the way through basic into airborne school. And then, of course, with the RIB cadre, which I've never experienced anything in my life like that. I've never been challenged in any way, shape, or form like that in my life. And whenever any difficulty, whenever any adversity rears its head, I can look back at that experience and know that I have it within me to accomplish that. And just an incredible amount of respect for the men and women that raise their hand, toe the line, swear the oath, and make their way into our forces. It's an incredible honor to be counted a number of among them.
I agree with you because my experiences were slightly different, but I have exactly the same result. That's where I learned that I could do, how much I could do, and was proud of doing, pushing, achieving, and with the guys that I worked with. It was awesome. Okay, you started at some point in your life, you manifested a desire to salute veterans. When and where was the first time you did something like that? How do you do it now?
Well, I joined right now. I'm in business with my two brothers, and that's a relatively recent development. I got out of the Army in Savannah, Georgia, met my wife there, got into the car business and spent 25 years in automotive retail. During that time, my brothers joined my father in business. They own Ashley Home Stores. They had three in Ohio. They had one in Michigan. And 2 years ago in 2020, circumstances in my life made it feasible where I could join. And I wanted to do so for a number of reasons. First, I love these two men with all of my heart. I respect them immensely. They're incredible businessmen. But one of the things that I enjoy so much and appreciate so much is that 12 years ago, they got their company managers together and they said, you know, we're a little important to a whole bunch of different groups. We sponsor a little league team here. We contribute to a bowling league there, but let's figure out one group of individual, one group that we can truly make an impact. And our management team, to a person, raised their hand and said, let's make a difference to veterans. So what began as a veteran celebration in Belle Fountain, Ohio, which was our first store, with about 15 veterans coming in on a Saturday morning. We had breakfast for them. We had a little entertainment, and we gave away a couple recliners, has now morphed into an event where we'll have 500 to 800 veterans plus their families. We'll have keynote speakers at the event here in Michigan, which we took place here just a couple weeks ago. We gave away, donated almost $40,000 in furniture to the veteran community. We had 13 veteran service providers there at the Lake Michigan Credit Union ballpark. So we were able to put our veteran community in touch with those organizations that are dedicated to their service and taking care of them. And we're about to do the same here coming up this October 2nd down in Ohio, in Marion, Ohio. We'll do the same thing. So it is just truly a joy. It's an incredible event, getting a chance to sit down and speak to the veteran community and shake hands and tell stories and just share that camaraderie that as brothers and sisters in arms we've shared before.
Yes, sir. I could not agree more. To be able to be part of something like that, not just as a one-shot event, but as a regular thing, that's got to be one of the most amazing and wonderful, I don't know what the right word is, feelings, participation, I don't know what it is.
All of those things. And, you know, Denny, it's great that we do that once a year. But what I truly love is that anytime we have a veteran in any of our stores, we have a gong. And the sales associate walks up, slams that gong, the sound reverberates through the store, everybody stops what they're doing and comes up and thanks that service member and their family for their service. We've got a challenge coin we give them. We get a picture of them and we put that on our wall of honor, which is displayed in every one of our stores. And then we make certain we have them registered for the veterans event. And we provide them a free delivery courtesy for their military service. And we provide them complimentary service for the furniture that they provide. So whenever that happens in any of our stores, it's just a neat feeling that everybody stops and takes that moment to say thanks and to truly express to the veteran our appreciation. And the look on their faces, and even more the look on their families' faces when we do that, is something that just makes coming to work every day worthwhile.
Mitch, I really appreciate what you do, but the part to me that really rings is that you honor the family too, because they also serve, even if they don't deploy.
Absolutely.
They do serve. So I appreciate that. Mitch, we just got a minute. Give us a quick summary of your businesses right now.
We have Ashley Home Stores. We're a licensee of Ashley Furniture Industries. They're the largest retail furniture manufacturer in the world. As licensees, we run our own businesses. We just have them as a phenomenal partner. So we have three stores in Ohio, in Belle Fountain, Marion, and Mansfield, Ohio. We have three stores in Michigan, two in Grand Rapids and one in Kalamazoo, with plans to expand further into Western Michigan. We're dialed deep into our communities, deep roots. We have the Veterans Outreach Program for our veterans. We have the Hope to Dream, where we provide mattresses for children that don't have one. We're just blessed every day that this business and our company has been in business for 75 years. Our grandfather founded it right after World War II. Just truly blessed to be part of an organization bigger than myself and to craft something that that continues to support those associates that come to work with me every single day and those veterans and families in our communities.
Mitch, thank you. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation back in uniform. Thank you for what you're doing now as being a great patriotic American. Help America in being proud of who we are. Wow, do we ever need that now.
Denny, thank you so very much for having me today. Truly a pleasure to chat with you, and Rangers, lead the way.
Hoo-ah. Coming up next on Front Lines of Freedom, we'll talk with Mike Miller about his book on General MacArthur. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. It's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code.
We were instrumental in passing the VA Mission Act, so more veterans could have options and freedom in their health care. We're leading the charge to end America's endless wars, bringing thousands of troops home and stopping trillions of dollars from being wasted. Our key to success? You. We bring your voice to our nation's leaders so we can all have a better future. We are Concerned Veterans for America, the voice of veterans for freedom and prosperity. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show my West Point classmate, Mike Miller. Mike served our nation well in combat in Vietnam. We were there together. He's now, among other things, an author. And his newest book is about an amazing man and soldier, General Douglas MacArthur. Welcome, Mike. I want to hear what you think about him.
Yeah. Hi, Denny. It's good to talk to you again. Yeah, I was there in 1962 at West Point when Douglas MacArthur made his farewell speech to West Point, and I was quite touched by this old man and the firm control he had of his facts and the emotions, and the fact that he spoke for like 20 minutes with no notes and didn't hesitate or pause once. I sensed that he was really a great guy. And then a couple years later, when he passed away, I was also a part of the funeral parade in New York City for the guy. So I had a little bit of a connection with him. But later in life, I ran into some experiences in the Army that were very difficult for me. When I went to Vietnam, I was 28 years old. I was very idealistic and very enthusiastic about serving my country. And when I got over there, I ran into a situation where a superior officer went out of his way to sabotage my unit because he was jealous of the work that we had done. And this put a lot of my men and I in grave danger a couple of times. And I was incredibly shocked that people, especially Army officers, could behave this way. Well, later in life, I realized with the reading I have done about MacArthur that the same thing had happened to him, but on a much greater scale. And that when MacArthur was serving his country, the president for most of his career was, or for a good part of his career, was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And they had known each other as young men in Washington, D.C. After World War I. MacArthur was the Army Chief of Staff in Washington, D.C., and he had worked with a young politician named Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and they had become friends. Then later, when Roosevelt got polio, Roosevelt seemed to undergo a personality change and got very resentful of people who were healthy. And Roosevelt was kind of a golden boy. He had been born into a wealthy, powerful family, and he expected to be very successful. And then polio knocked him back, and he couldn't walk for the rest of his life. And according to MacArthur, he started resenting MacArthur, and it messed up their friendship.
You know, that kind of thing does happen in life, doesn't it? This isn't unique here. It's just unique to two incredibly powerful people who had a huge impact on the life of all Americans. But somehow America survived it, didn't it?
Yes. To me, the interesting thing is that this does happen. And when it happened to Douglas MacArthur, I wish our system, I wish our press, I wish our journalists, our investigative journalists, had told us about this interesting conflict, because it would have helped guys like me later in life when I ran into the same thing. MacArthur's problems were compounded because after the Civil War, the most popular soldier in the United States was Ulysses Grant. And he was just swept into office as president. Well, World War II, and one of the most popular soldier at the time is Douglas MacArthur. And so Roosevelt saw MacArthur as a huge political opponent. So it's almost beyond our ability to conceive this, but Douglas MacArthur sacrificed 50,000 soldiers and Marines and sailors in the Philippines to keep Douglas MacArthur there and have him defeated by the Japanese, to destroy his ability to be a political threat. And that's the evilness of this is something that should be reported after all this time. One of our problems was Franklin Roosevelt was a very popular man. I remember when I was 5 years old, I still remember it, standing in my grandpa's dining room table, and my grandpa cried like a baby when he heard on the radio that FDR had died. That's how popular he was with the American people. And so he was untouchable. And that's why he was able to get away with something like this and without it being widely reported. And so to me, it's a lesson of history that should be told. I'm a bit of an amateur historian in that I read a lot. And so I said, heck, no one else has told this story. I'm going to tell it.
Well, I'm glad you did. And you've got a book coming out. We'll talk about what people can get that in a couple of minutes. Mike, you went to Vietnam. You led a combat unit there, but you weren't an infantryman, were you? You were?
I was an engineer. We were sent down to the Mekong Delta to an area that was hotly contested. Place was full of Viet Cong. Every other person was Viet Cong. And we built schools in little villages that hadn't had a school in 50 years. And this was incredibly gratifying for my men and I to do this, the appreciation of these people, these hardworking. Vietnamese are great people, and they're hardworking, and they love their families, they love their kids, and educating their children was like a dream to them. I cannot tell you the number of times that Vietnamese farmers put their lives at risk to warn us that there was an ambush set up down the road or things like that, because they wanted us to build those schools for their kids. And so it was a very, very once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really do some good. And my men and I had a wonderful experience doing that.
You know, at the risk of getting away from the topic of your book, the great things MacArthur did, and he did, the one story about him I remember, and I don't know if it's true or not, you might know, is that at his wedding, he told his wife, I love you, and I'm probably not going to tell you again. Do you remember that in any of the reading you did?
No, but it sounds like MacArthur. He had a good sense of humor. MacArthur was an interesting guy. He was a mama's boy. His mother actually moved to West Point, lived in the Thayer Hotel on campus while her son attended West Point for all 4 years. He was a real mama's boy, and mama followed him around. So he didn't have much of a successful marriage for many years until mama died. And then he married a wonderful lady named Jean and raised a son and had a wonderful family. And Jean is kind of a heroine in his story because of she refused to leave the Philippines without her husband. She stayed on Corregidor, she and her four-year-old son, with Douglas MacArthur through all of his perils.
I remember that clearly.
Wonderful woman.
Mike, okay, now let's get to your book. When does the book come out? How can people buy a copy?
It's out now, and it's on Amazon.com. It's called Douglas MacArthur, From Betrayal to Victory.
And the author is Mike Miller, Michael Miller.
That's it, Dennis. And it's and anyone who's got an inkling for history or human nature wants to study the fallacies and the weaknesses of human nature should find this book interesting. There's a little bit of evil in all of us, and we need to understand that I like to say we're 95% angel and 5% evil. Hey. And we have to keep a control of that evil tendency. And boy, Franklin Delano Roosevelt destroyed his reputation by succumbing to jealousy and envy.
Mike, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation. And thank you for a book about a great guy. I appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, Dennis.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Quentin Roberts about Service Academy football. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice. Then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Thank you. Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
Nearly 30% of veterans have disabilities caused by military service. At Berry Law, we fight to make sure that every veteran receives full compensation for their injuries. Our team of attorneys, veterans, and former VA employees have helped veterans recover over $100 million in back pay from inadequate VA decisions. For a free consultation, call 888-883-2483.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. And it's Service Academy football time. Joining me, of course, is our football co-host, Quentin Roberts. Welcome, bro. Glad you're back.
Good to be here, Denny. Excited for this show.
This is going to be a different show, but we got to start with last weekend's games. Army had a bye. Air Force and Navy both won. Air Force won at Nevada. Talk about that.
Well, Denny, Air Force really had its running game in full effect as they defeated Nevada 48-20 in Falcon Stadium. They jumped to a 10-0 first quarter lead behind a field goal from Matthew DePore. And then it was the Brad Roberts show. He added the first of two of his three touchdown runs to give the Falcons a 24-7 halftime lead, and the Falcons never looked back. For his efforts, Brad Roberts was voted as the Mountain West Offensive Player of the Week as they tune up for, of course, the vaunted game against Navy.
Yes, sir. And Navy had their first win, too, against East Carolina.
In a thriller, defeating the East Carolina Pirates in double overtime, 23-20. I tell you, Navy has been really looking for a spark this year, and they found it in their connection from their quarterback to a running back going, streaking down the middle of the field, able to score a long touchdown. The defense has been playing good football all season long as the midshipmen got off the schneid and got their first win of the season against a tough East Carolina team.
Yes, they did. So that was a good weekend for the service academies. How'd the Coast Guard and Merchant Marine Academy do?
Well, in Paxton, Massachusetts, the U.S. Coast Guard Academy Bears moved to 2-2 as they defeated the Anna Maria AmCats, who moved to 2-1, 66-28. Throw out the old records, bring in the new, because the Coast Guard Bears set all sorts of rushing and passing records, a total offense records en route to a thrashing of Anna Maria, 66-28.
Yes, sir. And the Merchant Marine?
Well, those Merchant Marine Academy Mariners moved to 2-1 as they defeated the Keene Cougars in a rock fight, 9-7. It was a defensive slugfest, but the Mariners prevailed.
They did indeed. Okay, that was last weekend. Now, this weekend, Army hosts Georgia State. What's that going to look like?
Well, Denny, that Army-Georgia State game is going to be a tough game for Army, but it's at home, and Georgia State's 0-4 this year. Army is favored by 8.5. They really got their running game going just before their bye week, and I expect that they have really used that bye week to get healthy and to really tighten up some of those just slight missteps that really cost you inches. And when Army's playing that 3 yards in a cloud dust kind of football, inches mean a lot. They predicate themselves, of course, on ball control and their tough run game, getting the fullback run game cranked up and holding the ball, really increasing that time of possession. I think they'll be able to do that against Georgia State and expect a few big plays. I really expect Army to roll in this game. Take Army into point.
And now there's another little game being played this weekend, and we have a special guest joining us as we discuss the Air Force-Navy game. Vince McBeth, a retired Navy commander, was a Naval Academy 1986 player and team captain. So rather than say welcome, I guess I should say welcome aboard. Right, Vince?
Denny, thank you. I got to tell you, it's an honor to be here. Really appreciate the time. And I really appreciate what you do with this show and the reach that you have.
It's fun. Okay, Quentin, you guys discuss your game. I'm going to sit back and listen and laugh.
Well, Vince, you were able to suit up for the midshipmen from, was it 83 to 86? Those are the years that you played. And you had four games against Air Force's Air Force Navy Week. And I just want to start off by, one, tell us where you're from, what led you to the Naval Academy, and then one of your best memories from the Air Force Navy rivalry game.
Well, Quinn, thank you for that. I'm from Camden, Arkansas, a small town in South Arkansas, maybe 14,000 people. I had the great fortune of having educators around me, specifically a high school counselor who got me interested in the Naval Academy or the service academies as a young junior. I started that application process in the spring of my junior year. Along the way, the football coach and staff and recruiting process stepped in, and I was fortunately noticed and was actively recruited by the Naval Academy to play football there.
And Gary Tranquil was the coach at that time, wasn't he?
That's right. Gary Tranquil was the head coach, and his son, Chris, was at the Academy with us a couple of years behind both of us, and it was a terrific time in terms of commitment to the Academy and all the virtues and everything that it represents.
That's tremendous for a young man from Camden, Arkansas. I'm sure the pride of Camden, Arkansas. But as you were able to start playing in 83 and 84 and then move on, you were able to captain the team in your senior year. Tell us a little bit about your career and then that best Air Force memory.
Well, let me tell you, I started as a young 185-pound defensive back. Folks always ask me, Vince, why did you wear number 19 as an inside linebacker? And I often remind them, I wore 19 as a defensive back. I was just too lazy to change my number when I switched positions. But 20 pounds a year, Quentin, gained a lot of weight, got a lot of strength. I was 17 years old when I took that oath and walked through the door. So it was just a time of growth. And fortunate that I was able to be a starter as a young plebe out there. And then again, as a sophomore, as a defensive back, moved to linebacker my junior year and started there my junior and senior years. Look, when I think back on Navy Air Force, I'll tell you the honest to God truth. It's terrifying. Look, I want you to think about it. To avoid revisionist history, I have to go to the numbers. So 4 years combined score, right? So we lost to Air Force 4 years straight by a combined score of 137-52. We only lost to Notre Dame 120-60. Now, that's not a whole lot of difference, but I think we chatted the other day. I was telling you how I put Air Force and Notre Dame really on the same level, in the same category. It's that rarefied air that makes your program so special. Have a lot of respect for Air Force. It's hard not to. How can you not? I love all my service academies, but that's the perspective that I have. We went there, and I'm going to be quick with this. We went there my senior year riding high. We came into that game, I believe we were 2-1 and had one of the best teams physically, talent-wise, that Navy has ever had. My roommate, Tom Dolman, from Michigan, by the way, inside linebacker, started his freshman year through his senior year, woke me up that morning at the hotel. And he was like an excited kid. And I said, Tom, what's going on? He says, Vince, you got to come and see this. So I walk over to the window because he's got his head pressed against the glass. The day before, you remember this, Quinn.
I do.
You remember this. I think you probably ordered it. The day before, we were in shorts and T-shirts with 65-degree weather, and it was absolutely gorgeous. We woke up game day. It was freezing cold and snow on the ground.
And windy. So,
you ordered up what you needed because you obviously got it done.
Vince, you're very right about that. That was a great memory. And as we look forward to this weekend's game and the next game, what do you foresee for Navy and in this game?
Yeah, I think Navy's going to ride their momentum. They had great momentum. They saw success in a challenging double overtime game last week. I have every confidence that Navy is going to ride that into a victory there at Air Force. It's an early morning game, and I think that works to our advantage.
All right. Well, Vince, thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you and speaking to you. And I'll turn it back over to Denny.
That's awesome. I can't wait to see that game. Thank you, Quentin, for your insights today. Thank you, Vince, for joining us. This is fun. We're going to have to do this again for the Army-Navy game. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Go Navy, beat Air Force.
That's right. Go Air Force, sink Navy.
And that's the game for today. Troops, if you're a veteran who's having trouble with your disability, getting it approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach him at PTSDlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
HealthVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HealthVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HealthVet.net. HealthVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Frontlines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I really welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. Skip, what's the first one?
Well, Colonel, Matt, not a vet, just a patriotic fan of Frontlines of Freedom, wants to know how can the Air Force take pilots off of flying status and remove them from their positions because of no COVID stab when a federal court has prohibited this?
Matt? It's clear that our Pentagon is not in any way concerned about our Constitution, the rights of people, or following the law. That's been clear to me for some time. I hurt with you.
And Sue, whose dad served in the Korean War, appreciated the interview on Korean War veterans.
Thanks, Sue. We do need to ensure that they get the respect they deserve. Okay, now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's the first one?
Well, on 4 October 1861, during the Civil War, President Abraham Lincoln observed a balloon demonstration near Washington, D.C. Both Confederate and Union armies experimented with using balloons to gather military intelligence in the early stages of the war, but the balloons proved to be dangerous and impractical for most situations.
And probably just full of hot air.
Yes. There are probably more of that near Washington, D.C., too.
Ooh, amen, bro. And on 7 October 1864, during the Civil War, the Union warship Wachusett captured the famed Confederate raider Florida while the rebel ship was at port in Bahia, Brazil. After the Yankee crew sailed the Florida out to sea, the Brazilian government protested the invasion of its neutrality. The Union returned the ship and crew to the Confederate government, but the Florida was sunk 6 weeks later off Hampton Roads, Virginia.
And on October 7th, 1914, advancing German forces bombard the Belgian city of Antwerp as Belgian troops and their British allies struggled to resist the onslaught. After the mighty fortress city of Liege fell to the Germans in the opening weeks of World War I, King Albert I ordered the Belgian army's remaining 65,000 troops in the region to retreat to the city of Antwerp, protected by a ring of 48 inner and outer forts and some 80,000 garrison troops. From Antwerp, Belgian forces conducted sorties in August and September 1914, designed to distract the German First Army, led by General Alexander von Kluck, from its attacks against the British and French over the French frontier. After von Kluck was forced to send four divisions to repel an attack from Antwerp on September 9, German Chief of Staff von Moltke decided to send his men against Antwerp with the goal of capturing the city.
Not a good day for Antwerp, but they sure did a good job. And on 3 October 1942, during World War II, German rocket scientist Werner von Braun's brainchild, the V-2 missile, was fired successfully from Peenemünde, an island off Germany's Baltic coast. It traveled 118 miles, it proved extraordinarily deadly in the war, and was the precursor to the intercontinental ballistic missiles of the post-war era.
And on October 7th, 1943, Rear Admiral Shigetsu Matsu Sakaibara commander of the Japanese garrison on the Wake Island, ordered the execution of 96 American POWs, claiming they were trying to make radio contact with U.S. forces.
That sounds weird. Okay, on 4 October 1944, during World War II, General Dwight Eisenhower distributed to his combat units a report by the U.S. Surgeon General that revealed the hazards of prolonged exposure to combat. It was called shell shock. Quote, the danger of being killed or maimed imposes a strain so great that it causes men to break down. One look at the shrunken, apathetic faces of psychiatric patients, sobbing, trembling, referring shudderingly to them shells and to buddies mutilated or dead, is enough to convince most observers of this fact, end quote. This was the beginning of recognition of what we now know as post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD.
And on October 4th, 1957, the successful launch of the unmanned satellite Sputnik 1 by the Soviet Union shocked and frightened many Americans. Colonel, I was only like 2 weeks old at the time. I don't remember seeing Sputnik.
You don't? Well, it scared no, the heck out of a lot of Americans because we thought we were going to beat the Russians into space, and we didn't. And on 5 October 1969, in an embarrassing breach of our air defense capability, a Cuban defector entered U.S. airspace undetected and landed his Soviet-made MiG-17 at Homestead Air Force Base, Florida. Air Force One was at the base at the time, waiting to return President Richard Nixon to Washington. The base was subsequently put on continuous alert, and it opened a new radar tracking facility to prevent the repetition of a similar incident in the future. Yeah, the pilot defected, and yeah, we were glad to have a new MiG to look at.
But it was embarrassing.
Oh, very.
And on 7 October 1970, during the Vietnam War, in a televised speech, President Richard Nixon announced a five-point proposal to end the war based on a standstill ceasefire in place in South Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia. He proposed eventual withdrawal of U.S. forces, unconditional release of prisoners of war, and political solutions reflecting the will of the South Vietnamese people. Nixon said that the communist proposals for the ouster of South Vietnamese leaders were totally unacceptable and rejected them. These proposals were well received at home, but were rejected by the communists a few days later.
What a surprise. Yeah, trying to solve problems by talking with dictators doesn't often work. On 6 October 1973, the surprise attack by Egyptian and Syrian forces on Israel threw the Middle East into a turmoil and threatened to bring the U.S. and Soviet Union into direct conflict for the first time since the Cuban Missile Crisis in 62. Though actual combat did not break out between the two nations, the events surrounding the Yom Kippur War seriously damaged U.S.-Soviet relations and all but destroyed President Richard Nixon's much-publicized policy of détente.
And on October 7th, 2001, a U.S.-led coalition began attacks on Taliban-controlled Afghanistan with an intense bombing campaign by American and British forces. Logistical support was provided by other nations, including France, Germany, Australia, and Canada, and later, troops were provided by the anti-Taliban Northern Alliance rebels. The invasion of Afghanistan was the opening salvo in the U.S. war on terrorism and a response to the 9/11 terrorist attacks on New York and Washington, D.C.
That was the beginning. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, Skip. What you got this week?
Well, all of us here at Frontlines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Well, a Wisconsin resident with combat experience helping U.S. troops in Laos during the Vietnam War turned the tables on a trio of would-be carjackers. Say Lee Vang stepped out of his home in Milwaukee around 9 a.m., and when three young men suddenly emerged and tried to rob him at gunpoint, the 66-year-old Yang said he turned the tables on the group, chasing them away before returning to his vehicle to pursue them. One of the suspects shot at his vehicle four times, with one of the bullets striking a neighbor's car. The 66-year-old was not injured. He looked at the criminals and said, "Today is not my day to go." Vang served in Laos helping U.S. troops from 1971 to 1975 until coming to the U.S. in 79.
Thanks, Colonel. I feel like there's a lot simmering below the surface in America these days. We had a saying in the Marine Corps, and it went like this. That is tighter than a gnat's butt stretched over a barrel. Whenever I recall that old saying, I get this visual image of a giant cartoon bug with a big rubber butt being stretched over the top of a barrel and snapped tightly into place. Now, that's silly, I know, but it's been in my mind for decades now. Here's the thing, folks. The good people in America are getting sick and tired of living in a lawless nation. Young people are running around loose, committing crime after violent crime with impunity against innocent victims. Our cities are overrun with graft and corruption. Our southern border is like cheesecloth with drug runners, human traffickers, and terrorists coming into our country in a steady stream. The patience of good American citizens is wearing thin, being stretched tighter than a gnat's butt stretched over a barrel. Normally, I wouldn't advise the average citizen to resist three armed thugs in a property crime. I'd just say, hand over your truck keys, call the cops, and be a good witness. But here's the thing. Military veterans, especially combat vets, aren't average citizens. We have training and abilities and experience that average civilians don't possess. Think of it this way. Tell a military combat vet to hand over his keys to a bunch of violent teens is like telling a lion to surrender to three jackals. And when I think about it, even though I'm now officially a senior citizen, giving in to violent crime without a fight just rubs my hackles the wrong way. People all over America, even non-veterans, are becoming fighting mad and starting to stand up and say enough is enough. And I'm okay with that. Would even applaud that fighting spirit. But here's my advice to the civilians. If you're going to fight back against human jackals, then you need to be prepared both physically and mentally. We don't send our fighting men into combat without proper equipment and training. All you civilians out there with the will to fight need to get good training and then arm yourself with a good firearm. Can we all agree that if you're going to get into a gunfight, you might as well win? Well, Frontlines of Freedom applauds this combat vet from Wisconsin, and we encourage more U.S. citizens to get trained and armed as violent crime in America spirals out of control.
Yes, sir. There is an old saying, don't bring a knife to a gunfight, so be prepared. Our movie of the month is Migrants. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. And we'll review it at the end of the month, of course, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Please send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss keeping American farmers and ranchers in business with farmer Adam Lalonde and rancher Ron Pelton. Our nation should be food independent, and we're not. Then Chaplain Scott McChrystal will discuss our pressing need to abandon woke and return to our nation's founding values, and we'll discuss this weekend's Service Academy football games. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase this book on frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes in the Frontlines of Freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the Frontlines of Freedom. Dismissed.